Thank you so much for joining us, Andrew.
It's a pleasure. It's good to be here.
Now, what does lo-fi mean?
Okay, well, I think it's going to be one of those terms that's going to mean different things to different people. The generation that I am, which doesn't feel that old from my side of things, but I guess the term lo-fi, like when I was coming up, wasn't probably used. It was more hi-fi. So, you know, everyone would have a hi-fi, and high fidelity was the thing that you were going for. And the thought that you would purposely go for a low fidelity sound when you're recording music or making music was just, I mean, I guess it just wasn't a thing. I mean, we were still, so I guess, when am I talking? I'm talking about the late 80s. And so if you were going to record, you were still recording to tape back then. So CDs had just emerged. So digital was a very, very new thing, but certainly recording studios weren't dealing with it. There was a warmth about analog. And I think as digital has matured and really kicked in, and sound has become cleaner and more, I guess you could argue, more sterile. It's like you can have whatever level of pristine, unblemished sound you wish, that the concept of lo-fi is more a reaction to that. Mm. And as well, as a genre, I understand that it's, you know, it's sort of like a sub-genre as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's only in the last maybe 20 years that it's been an option to, it's like, I want more tape hiss. Because we're speaking before we went to air, that the thought of asking a studio engineer to actually, you want more tape hiss. I mean, that's just quite a bizarre concept.
Absolutely.
But now, I mean, digital, when digital first was sort of, you know, gaining, or still developing, the sound could be very hard and very harsh. And analog was always seen as that warmth, you know, the warmth of tape, the warmth of valves. And so perhaps lo-fi is an effort to kind of come back and regain some of that, I know, that humanity in the sound.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Well, what do you think makes the audio imperfections in lo-fi appealing?
I really don't know. Apart from that, there's like an unpredictability about it, and maybe there's a nostalgia for, you know, the thought of putting a record on, and you know, there's a scratch or there's dirt or there's something that there's a blemish there, which I'm a jazz musician, and in the music, in melodies and in songs and in improvisation, they're the things, the unpredictability of that. That's what I really enjoy. And so perhaps there's an element of that in lo-fi as well, that, you know, it's not perfect. It's, you know, it is a bit grungy. It is, has got a bit of dirt about it, you know. It
can be a little yucky.
It totally, totally. There's something beautiful with that.
Yeah, of course. Lo-fi hip-hop is, I guess, like, tailor-made to be subconscious, present but barely perceptible, you know, drawing comparisons to jazz, which is also known to be like quite the go-to background music. So what makes background music, I guess, ideal?
Look, I guess I have to sort of put my hand up here that as a trained musician, I find it incredibly difficult to have music on in the background.
Oh,
but that's just me. That's, you know, that I guess as, you know, as an occupation, you sort of train yourself to never have it on. If there's music playing, I'm trying to figure out what key it's in. If I had my saxophone, what I would play. Could I make, you know, could I contribute to this in any way? Mm. If I was going to learn the song, you know, all of those things. And that's that. I can't turn that off.
Yeah.
But I know that lots of people study and have music on in the background, you know, and I guess there's something kind of soothing to have sound. Again, if you've got absolute silence, it can be a very sterile environment, and sort of that can be quite unnerving as well.
Yeah.
So I totally understand how people can do it. And I suppose lo-fi hip hop, it's not demanding to be heard in the way that, you know, I don't know, Bohemian Rhapsody demands to be heard. It's really hard
absolutely.
To have that on and not listen to Brian May's guitar. You know, it's like, you're going to hear that. So I think there's something, it's designed to, like, there's a beat that you can probably feel as much as you can hear. It's got all of the elements that are right to be getting on with something else and have it sort of bubbling away on the burner while you're doing something else.
Yeah. I mean, like, I wouldn't call myself a professional musician, but I am a musician. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah. I totally understand that vibe of just, like, once you're so used to, like, listening to music actively, because you're actively playing it, it's hard to kind of turn off that switch of, like, what am I listening to?
That's exactly it. And I think the word you use, active listening, you know, that's exactly right. And so, you know, musicians are kind of training themselves all the time to constantly be active, as opposed to that, you know, you're going shopping and, you know, you're in the supermarket and there's music on, you know. Music's there all the time. So often if I'm listening to anything while I'm doing something else, it tends to be like a podcast, or it tends to be a chat show or something, because I can isn't that funny? I find I can switch off to speech. I can't switch off to music.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. Maybe that's just a weird anomaly.
Oh, see, I can't do it at all. Right. Like podcasts, I'm like, I need to be listening to everything they are saying.
Yeah.
So with your experience as a live performer, how would this how would lo-fi, I guess, translate in a live setting?
Well, I guess the closest thing I could think of would be, like, you know, jamming with a DJ, or jamming with somebody who's sort of putting down some, like, a groove, and that, because a lot of it's very you know, to use a musical term, a lot of it's very modal, so it's in one key, it's very repetitive, which is actually fantastic for a soloist, that you can kind of make yourself at home, you know? So I guess that I'd love to do that. But again, I guess if you're thinking of the music as being background, you probably don't want a saxophone screaming, or a, you know, guitar playing, or someone soloing over the, probably defeating the purpose there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could certainly find something to play. If I was, I'd be up for the challenge.
Now, final question here. Why do you think people enjoy curating music to soundtrack their life?
Look, I think, again, to sort of go back to that word nostalgia, I mean, there's you know, we do associate music and probably all kinds of art with significant periods in our lives. And so I guess, and as we get older, we probably return to those things. I mean, you just have to look at, you know, rock bands from the 70s, and they're still touring and still filling venues, probably with the same audiences that came to see them 20 or 30 years previously. So I think there's some of that. I think probably for students who are, you know, still putting down those tracks for the first time, there is probably comfort in that, you know. And it's also that sense of community, and the hang with your friends, and, you know, it's like, what are you listening to? Oh, I'm listening to this. Oh, that's fantastic. Let's share that. And just feeling a part of a community, I think, you know, we all like that. So I'm sure that's got something to do with it.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Andrew.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.